see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jack Kirkman Podcast.
Oh my God. This week seemed fun. I think this is episode 6. Oh my God. 6 weeks in a row, I've kept up a commitment to you guys. A commitment you didn't ask for. Oh well. You've got it. The once a week supplement to the I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast. This is no diary. This is what happened in pop culture and politics this week that's important to me. One half an hour. Let's begin. Well, this is some positive news in our new racist world. Not new. It just started racism. But, you know, I've got some update on all of the hate crimes that are going on in America since Trump became president. And as my aunt wants me to know, it's unrelated. And sure, she knows about these things. She lives in a bubble. She's lived in the same town her whole life. And, doesn't care about the news and reads fake websites. So yeah, she should know. She should do a podcast. But today's heartwarming story. The Mall of America in Minnesota hires its first Black Santa. Maybe Minnesota was thinking, what can we do to ease racial tensions in this country? It all starts with the mall. I've never been to Mall of America, and I've been to Minnesota 6 times. It's just not my thing. Like, I know that it's, you know, I'm not going there to go to the Claire's and get some earrings. I understand that the reason to go is because it's a tourist site, but I get anxious in big open malls like that. I think it would be like going, you know, I think I'm going to go to Minnesota to have a panic attack. It's just not for me. I could take a Klonopin, but then would I fly to Minnesota to take a Klonopin at the mall? I can do that here, please. Shoppers at America's largest shopping mall. Pardon me. We'll see a new face this weekend, a Black Santa Claus. I like how we say Black Santa Claus, like, oh no, Santa's really white, so we're just giving you a black one. We don't know what color a made-up person is. He should be every color. Not like there should be a Black Santa for black kids and a Asian Santa. I mean, there just should be, if we are made in God's image, and look how many different types of us there are, there should be all kinds of Santas roaming around for everybody. For the first time in the mall's 24-year history, a black man will play Santa Claus, the Minneapolis Star Tribune reported. Larry Jefferson, this guy looks like Santa. Like, his is almost too perfect. He looks like a cartoon of Santa. This man's face was meant to be Santa, and his beard looks real. I think they might have just hired the real Santa. Anyway, Larry Jefferson will pose for photos with children and adults alike from Thursday to Sunday as part of the Santa Experience. Santa Experience co-owner Landon Luther, who sounds like a superhero, told the Tribune the move to hire a Black Santa was a long time coming. We want Santa to be for everyone, period, Luther told the Tribune. Jefferson is a retired U.S. Army veteran from Texas. He signed a 4-day contract to work in Minneapolis and will return to Texas to finish the holiday circuit. Jefferson told WCCO-TV that children of other races are always excited to see him. It gives them something to identify with, but Santa is still just Santa. The Santa Claus Experience is by appointment only. Oh, well, pardon me. Pardon me. I wonder what other malls do Black Santas. I'm going to take a shot here and go to the Twitter comments. I hope they are not disgusting. Hang on. Because I feel like we really don't see enough or at all black Santas anywhere. And I hope these fucking racists aren't sitting there. Let's see. Tom Rockstro, white male, tweets, if the Santa was black from the start and they changed it to a white Santa, that's be racist, though. What a damn joke. Well, that's your children, America. Whatever generation has a 20-year-old guy on Twitter, that's your children. Is that my generation? I mean, because I could have a 20-year-old son if I'd had a kid at 22. Or 21, or 20. But most people don't. So I'm going to say it's like a half generation above me. Like people in their 50s. I don't know. Who is to blame for these goddamn racist idiots? You know, that notion of, you know, we just need these people to die off. We never need the people younger than us to die off too. We've got to give them poison in their pancakes. I don't think it's stopping people. I really don't. I have this terrible feeling that the same amount of people are racist coming up as always were. Because you've got your racist grandparents and parents, and they raised people, and not all those people turned out to be like me. And so you've got, though, now those racist people are raising new kids. And it's so like, everybody has to die. We've got to take the 20-year-olds who weren't raised by racists, and then they have to start the world over. But that's going to be a long time. And in the meantime, so everyone is always raising, hey, the good news is that while you sleep, someone is raising a racist. I mean, I don't understand. There's more of us than there are of them. I know that because Hillary Clinton's lead just went up to fucking 2.5 million votes. Not that everyone, obviously people are blind spotted and obviously can be racist if you vote for Hillary. But this blatant stupidity. One is too many. How are you 20 years old and have access to the internet, which is could be such a beautiful tool for coming together and learning? God, I remember in the 2000s, it was like, can you imagine your kids will be able to have friends in, say, Iraq, and they can email with each other, and there won't be racism, because you'll actually be able to know people from other races if the neighborhood you're in doesn't really have that option, and if you're not going to be traveling until you're, you know, a little older. You could be a 13-year-old with a friend who is dark skin in your little Connecticut home. And then I don't think that's what we ended up using the internet for, coming together internationally. I don't think it is. I heard so many myths back then. I was part of the dot-com boom. I worked at a dot-com that I thought I was going to get rich. I got stock options, people. Fuck you. Moving to my castle. And the whole thing, a great documentary is it called dot-com? I'll look it up. But man, I was living it when it happened. I was getting fired from a dot-com job. I'm just going to look up the name of this documentary. It would probably seem so dated now, but I bet it would be really good to revisit. Startup.com from 2001. Anywho. But the promise was, well, we're not even going to have to go to offices anymore. There's not going to be traffic anymore. Because people are going to be online and interconnected and they can work from home. What happened to that? Why is there more people on the road than ever? People are now working from home and working from an office and working from their cars. Pretty pissed about how that turned out for me. I got to be fucking honest with you. Okay. Well, you know, I kind of made up a kind of job where I get to stay home when I want to. I mean, you know, I'm writing some scripts right now and there's no office to go to. I have an office in my home, which I don't even use. I sit on the couch in the living room. I'm sitting in my home office right now, and I'm like, I love this room, but it seems so far away from everything that I'm like, and then I want to be where the soul of my home is. Okay. So speaking of work, this is in this week's Sunday New York Times, November 27th. My subscription just went up. I only get the Sunday Times. Just went up to $10 a week. I guess it's worth it. It's sort of like, you know, I take like a half a day and read it. It's like a day, you know, cheaper than seeing a movie. But it's also like, hey, your reporting blows cock. You basically did what everyone else did. And you write these headlines like, Trump picks interesting person to write. No, he picked a racist anti-Semite. Like, don't use these weird words. And then, of course, the Hillary emails front page every day. Just the New York Times. Okay, but so there's a new way to relieve stress. I've heard about this. I've heard this was coming, and this actually did come to pass. Anger rooms are attracting customers who are so furious they just want to break things. Okay, Donna Alexander in the late 90s, as a teenager on the south side of Chicago, fantasized about setting up a space where stressed out people could relieve their tension in a safe, nonviolent way by smashing mannequins, televisions, furniture, and other objects. Maybe not televisions. I mean, can't you always recycle some of the parts in that? Whatever. I'm going to get angry that people are smashing televisions because it's going to upset my environmentalist tendencies and I'm going to have a nervous breakdown. Finally, in the fall of 2008, and by then living in Dallas, Ms. Alexander began an experiment. She invited current and past coworkers to her garage to pulverize items she had collected from the curbs in her neighborhood. I would play music on my laptop and just let them have at it. She charged $5. Soon, word of the stress relief session spread throughout Dallas. I started getting strangers at my door asking if my house was the place to break stuff. When that happened, I knew I had a business. Okay, so she accrued a four-month waiting list. In December 2011, she quit her job as a marketing manager for a steakhouse to officially start the Anger Room in a 1,000-square-foot space in downtown Dallas. But I don't want to be in there with a bunch of other people. Like, eventually you just start beating each other, don't you? Like, that was my TV. I was going to smash it. Maybe keep reading. Maybe you go in alone. The Anger Room charges $25 for 5 minutes. That's a good amount of time. You don't want to go too nuts. And after 5 minutes, if you're smashing things, you're exhausted. I think this is a good supplement to something. This can't be your therapy. Okay. Crushing printers, alarm clocks, glass cups, vases, and the like. Why can't I get behind this? Like, can you recycle the glass? Prices rise to about $500 for custom room setups. The more expensive setup so far has been a faux retail store complete with racks of clothing. That's funny. That's like some girl that worked in the fashion industry. Like, Anger Rooms have popped up around the world, including Houston. So far it's Dallas and Houston, Texas. Why are you so angry? Is it because you're making women have fetal funerals? I'll get to that. Toronto, Niagara Falls, and Australia. Now, Toronto and Niagara Falls, it's cold. Australia, they always just say Australia, like it's a city. It's a giant landmass that has as many different types of cities and places as, like, if you know there's one in Australia, where is it? Say the name of it. Is it Melbourne? Is it Perth? Is it the Walla Walla or whatever? I'm sure there's a place. There's no way there's not a place called Walla Walla, Australia. The American presidential election increased business at some Anger Rooms. Stressed out voters traveled all the way to Toronto from New York before and after the election. Well, they were just trying to set up citizenship. Customers wrote the name of the candidate they were frustrated with on a plate and smashed it. Why would you put Hillary's name on a plate unless you're upset she didn't win? But At the anger room in Dallas, mannequins of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were taking beatings before the election. I don't like that. This is fucked. I don't like beating things that look like people. But Trump attracted even more. We've gone through at least three of the male mannequins that we have to dress up as Donald Trump. I still don't enjoy that. Sessions in an anger room are meant to be therapeutic, but mental health professionals question the efficacy of rampaging in a faux cubicle or whacking airborne glasses. Although it's appealing to think that expressing anger can reduce stress, there is not much evidence of that, says George M. Slavik, a clinical psychologist and director of the Laboratory for Stress Assessment and Research at the University of California in Los Angeles. On the contrary, the types of physiological and immune responses that occur during anger can actually be harmful for health. That's what I thought. If you learn, it's not suppressing or repressing your anger, but if you learn how to go deeper and go, what is it? Sadness, loss of control, blah, blah, blah. Then you get to the real emotion. Anger is a frosting on the cake, honey. The real emotion is what's in the batter that you made the cake with. You got to get down to that. I'm not going to keep reading because it's long. But you can pick out a music soundtrack, classical, beating things to classical music. That's if you feel like having a cinematic experience. R&B, grunge, and heavy metal. And an array of baseball bats, golf clubs, 2x4s. We get things like metal pipes, mannequin arms, skillets, legs from tables, sledgehammers, crowbars, and things like that. Off limits are sharp objects and those that use ammunition. Well, I should hope so. The Rage Room's date night package in Toronto is the most popular offering. 45 minutes of destruction costs $19.99 and includes video downloads of the sessions. Customers bring their own music. I don't think that's first date material where you just see some guy losing his shit and beating up a mannequin. You're like, you know what? I'm going to go with what I'm seeing here and I'm going to get along. It's always like interesting when you're angry. You know how you feel. You know how far it's going to go or not go. You're like, no, I'm just screaming right now. It's going to be over in 5 minutes. I'm not really mad. I'm not walking through the world this way. But when you see someone else get angry, it's always so scary because you're like, I don't know what's in their soul. So I would not want to go on a date with someone to a rage room. Unless we were raging and partying. Ooh, ooh. Okay, so what was I saying we were going to talk about next? So many things. Oh, this is my favorite. Now, everybody's reporting on this wrong because people like the sexy, clickable headline. And this is why I think it's dangerous. So there's something going on in Texas, which is ridiculous. Here it is. The headline. Now, it's on salon.com, and I went deeper into the article and actually clicked on where it was from, which was the Texas Tribune. But Salon's headline was Texas wants aborted fetuses. The Texas Tribune headline was Texas wants aborted fetuses to be buried or cremated. Okay. And then I will tell you, so that is true. Wants is the key word, right? And then Salon's headline is Texas will now require funeral services whenever a woman has an abortion or a miscarriage. It's not quite there yet. And the reason I think that's an important distinction, Salon, with your clickbait headlines, is that if you think something's already happened, then you tend to feel anger and despondent and like, when did this happen? And fuck, there's nothing we can do about anything. And then you, in effect, let it happen. So if Salon really cared about not letting this happen, they would in their headline make very clear that it is not quite written in stone yet. And they get to it in the article, but how many people in this day and age actually click the article? Even smart people on the good side of things do not read the fucking articles. They pass it around and they make jokes like I do. I used that to make a joke on Twitter, but I had read the article and I fully understood that it hadn't happened yet. So I think an article saying Texas wants this to happen is quite clickbaity enough. We don't have to act like it happened in the middle of the night. So here's the actual situation. It was a little noticed effort, but in a little noticed effort to regulate abortion providers, Texas health officials have quietly proposed rules that would require abortion providers to cremate or bury all fetal remains. And it's not a funeral. They're not like, and then we have a priest come. I mean, maybe some weirdos would. But I think when we get so fantastical with our headlines and we say they want funerals, we sound stupid. What they're saying is they want a burial. They don't want to dispose of it as though it is hospital waste, because in their minds, they're defining it as a human life. So you don't put human life in a waste bin, even though it isn't. It's body crap. It's not a life that once was living. Anything that can't live outside the body is not human life. So they want to propose burying them or cremating them. Not throwing a funeral, you invite a priest and the townspeople come. Again, I'm sure some crazy people will do that. But it's more of a thing where, once again, we're back at that conversation that was settled by the Supreme Court, which is, it is not murder to end a pregnancy when it is still a fetus that hasn't developed into a baby. Okay, so in an effort to regulate abortion providers, Texas health officials are proposing rules that would require abortion providers to cremate or bury fetal remains. The new rules proposed by the Health and Human Services Commission would no longer allow abortion providers to dispose of fetal remains in sanitary landfills, instead allowing only cremation or interment? Am I crazy? Of all remains. Regardless of the period of gestation, abortion providers currently use third-party special waste disposal services. The Health and Human Services Commission developed new rules to ensure Texas law maintains the highest standards of human dignity, said Health Commission spokesman Brian Black. With little and no announcement, the proposed rules were published in the Texas Register on July 1st. Triggering a 30-day public comment period. Public comment will be taken, and then the final rules are expected to take effect in September. Because the proposed rules would not be in statute, they may not require approval by lawmakers. Instead, state agencies can adopt rules with specific rulemaking authority. But Republican Governor Greg Abbott is hoping lawmakers will write the new rules into law when they reconvene in January, said Abbott spokeswoman Ciara Matthews. Governor Abbott believes human and fetal remains should not be treated like medical waste, and the proposed rule changes affirms the value and dignity of all life. So that article was from July. So we have until January. We have until January to turn this around. And isn't all life human waste? I mean, for the love of Christ, why are we so precious about the human body? Ashes to ashes, y'all. But I'm not in favor of cremating medical waste. I just want to get some more information on this. The law exempts women who abort or miscarry at home. If a woman starts to miscarry at home but knows she may be forced to pay for the funeral services if she goes to a hospital for help, she might stay at home and hope that the failing pregnancy works itself out on its own. There's already significant evidence that a large number of Texas women are turning to DIY abortion methods rather than going to a doctor. The most popular method is using misoprostol, a drug that can induce miscarriage, either bought over the counter in Mexico or from a black market dealer who buys in bulk and brings it over the border. If going to a doctor means you need to hire funeral services for what looks like to the naked eye tissue from a heavy menstrual period, many women may be tempted to go the black market route. It appears there's no limit on how bizarre Texas conservatives are willing to go. So I guess that's the thing, too. They would make you pay for a funeral or cremation service. So as part of your abortion service, now there's an extra thing. But it's not on the books yet. Although it keeps saying doctors in Texas will now be required to hire funeral services anytime a woman ends or loses a pregnancy. That's of November 30th. But the other article made it seem like they're going to reconvene in January. So this is what I don't understand about so many things. Like, it's not over. It's not over. It's disgusting and horrifying. And in a lot of ways, it's the end of women's rights as we know it. But I just want everyone to be careful with those clickbait headlines. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure I'll hear about it if I am. I wanted to talk about the Trump carrier thing because it was really, really pissing me off. This guy on Twitter, Stephen Ratner, he said, this is the carrier deal in a nutshell. The job saved from going to the Indiana job saved from going to Mexico were 800. The jobs still going to Mexico were 1,300. Cost to Indiana taxpayers, $7 million. So, here's what the deal is. Donald Trump was bragging to the people of Indiana, I'm going to keep your factory jobs. He kept saying making air conditioners, even though it's furnaces, from going to Mexico. Now, the thing is, he couldn't do it. And he lied about it. He saved about 1,000 people's jobs were saved. So this is from our old friend Bernie Sanders, who you know I got issues with. But he's not wrong about economic stuff. He's just wrong about the way he campaigned. And he's wrong about his blind spot with women and minorities. But oh my God. Today, about 1,000 carrier workers and their families should be rejoicing. But the rest of our nation's workers should be very nervous. President-elect Donald Trump announced a deal with United Technologies, which is a corporation that owns a company called Carrier that keeps less than 1,000 of the 2,100 jobs in America that were previously scheduled to be transferred to Mexico. But it is not good enough to save some of those jobs. Trump made a promise that he would save all of these jobs. In exchange for allowing United Technologies, and he said, and we're going to tax them if they take these jobs out of America, and he didn't. He gave them a break. He did the opposite, and then he went on a victory tour in Indiana, and people were like, ooh, ooh. In exchange for allowing United Technologies to continue to offshore more than 1,000 jobs, Trump will reportedly give the company tax and regulatory favors that the corporation has sought. But just a few months ago, Trump was pledging to force United Technologies to pay a damn tax. He was insisting on very steep tariffs for companies like Carrier that left the United States and wanted to sell their foreign-made products back in the United States. Instead of a damn tax, the company will be rewarded with a tax cut. Wow, how's that for standing up to corporate greed? This is Bernie Sanders' words, not mine. In essence, United Technologies took Trump hostage and won. And that should send a shockwave of fear through all workers across the country. So bottom line, it's like, hey, we're going to leave the country if you don't give us something. And so instead of making them pay a tax, he gave them tax and regulatory favors. And then they left anyway. Some of them. Trump has endangered the jobs of workers who were previously safe in the United States. Why? What does this mean? It's because he has signaled to every corporation in America, right, what I just said, that they can threaten to offshore jobs in exchange for business-friendly tax benefits and incentives. Even corporations that weren't thinking of offshoring jobs will most probably be reevaluating their stance. And who would pay for the high cost for tax cuts that go to the richest businessmen in America? The working class of America. United Technologies is not going broke. Last year, it made a profit of $7.6 billion and received more than $6 billion in defense contracts. It goes on and on with all the money they receive. Does that sound like a company that deserves more corporate welfare from our government? Trump's Band-Aid solution is only making the problem of wealth inequality in America even worse. We need to reinstill an ethic of corporate patriotism. We need to send a very loud and clear message to corporate America. The era of outsourcing is over. Instead of offshoring jobs, the time has come for you to start bringing good-paying jobs back to America. If United Technologies or any other company wants to keep outsourcing decent-paying American jobs, these companies must pay an outsourcing tax equal to the amount of money they expect to save by moving their factories to Mexico or other low-wage countries. They should not receive federal contracts or other forms of corporate welfare. They must pay back all of the tax breaks and other corporate welfare they have received from the federal government. And they must not be allowed to reward their executives with stock options, bonuses, or golden parachutes for outsourcing jobs to low-wage countries. Which is why Bernie Sanders is introducing the Outsourcing Prevention Act. This is the most important thing that's going on, is a lot of industries are changing. So we don't really have a huge demand for certain things anymore. But the things we do have are being sent away. And Donald Trump literally did it in front of people's eyes. And people don't care. There was an article today that came out. An employee that works at Carrier took a photo of the letter he received from the company saying this was not good. The letter from Carrier to its employees that Donald Trump doesn't want you to read. This is on thinkprogress.org. It's not good news for everyone. Oh, and that thing I just read from Bernie Sanders from the Washington Post. It was his opinion piece. On Thursday, President-elect Donald Trump traveled to the Carrier factory in Indianapolis to tout the deal he helped orchestrate to keep about 800 manufacturing jobs in the United States in exchange for state and federal incentives, including $7 million from Indiana. Companies are not going to leave the United States anymore without consequence. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I'll tell you right now, Trump said during a speech at the factory. What Trump didn't mention either then or during a subsequent thank you rally later Thursday in Cincinnati is that the deal he helped broker won't prevent Carrier from outsourcing more jobs than are being saved in Indiana. In sum, about 800 jobs are being saved, but 1,300 are disappearing. Those painful details were acknowledged in a letter Carrier sent to affected workers on Thursday that was posted to Twitter by Indianapolis-based journalist Rafael Sanchez. And you can read that all on thinkprogress.org. During a Thursday appearance on CNBC, conservative economic policy analyst Jimmy Pethokakis went so far as to call Trump's speech at the Carrier plant absolutely the worst speech about economics in more than 30 years. Again, this guy is a conservative. He said the idea that American corporations are going to have to make business decisions not based on the fact that we've created an ideal environment for economic growth in the United States, but out of fear of punitive actions based on who knows what criteria exactly from a presidential administration, I think that's absolutely chilling, he said in an interview with CNBC's Closing Bell. It's essentially a transfer from the taxpayers of Indiana who are providing these tax breaks to the shareholders of United Technology plus those 1,000 workers. That's really not a model for creating jobs across America. So this is not opinion. This is not partisan. This is what he is doing. It is actually doing the opposite of what he said he was going to do and setting it up to happen again and again. Even jobs that are staying are again on the backs of the worker because the companies are being provided tax breaks. Corporations are not paying taxes. I don't know if you guys know this story. It is one of my favorite things. President carried out of office corporate tax breaks. I feel like I vaguely know of a story. Which president was it? Sorry about that. No, it's not Donald Trump. Oh, who was it? Hang on. I know you're like, what the hell are you doing? What president was it? I think it was, Roosevelt? Hang on. Oh, this is it. Okay. I knew this was a story. On December 27th in 1944, FDR seized control of Montgomery Ward. On this day in 1944, as World War II dragged on, President Franklin D. Roosevelt orders his Secretary of War to seize properties belonging to the Montgomery Ward Company because the company refused to comply with a labor agreement. During the war, the well-known retailer and manufacturer Montgomery Ward had supplied the Allies with everything from tractors to auto parts to workmen's clothing items deemed as important to the war effort as bullets and ships. However, Montgomery Ward chairman Sewell Avery refused to comply with the terms of three different collective bargaining agreements with the United Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union hammered out between 43 and 44. Sewell had to be carried out of his office by National Guard troops. By December of that year, Roosevelt was fed up with Sewell's obstinacy and disrespect for the government's authority. The uber-capitalist Sewell's favorite insult was to call someone a new dealer. On December 27th, Roosevelt ordered the Secretary of War to seize Montgomery Ward's plants and facilities in New York, Michigan, California, Illinois, Colorado, and Oregon. Sewell took the fight to federal court, but lost. That's what I want our presidents to do, is send the fucking troops into companies that don't pay taxes. It's treason. You can't not pay taxes in this country. It's what we're built on. I don't understand. Corporations, billions, just don't get paid. Donald Trump, he doesn't pay taxes. Do you know how that affects you? That affects you. And you vote for him. I don't understand. Do you hate people of different colors that much? What about the Jackson 5? You liked them? All right. I've gone on and on too long here. Let's end on a happy thing. I think there's a lot of similarities between Kanye West and Donald Trump. Kanye has been hospitalized, 5150'd, and I have about four friends in my life who've been 5150'd, and they all should have been. And some are recovered, some are dead, and some are not doing well. And it's a real fucking serious. There's so many disorders you could have: borderline personality, mania, manic depression, schizophrenia, narcissistic personality disorder, which is not as simple as I look in the mirror, I take a selfie. That is some qualities of narcissism, but narcissistic personality disorder is actually a diagnosed disease, and we need to understand the difference between being a narcissist and having narcissistic personality disorder, which is something that is unmanageable. You can't live with. Most people who have it, because of the very nature of the disease, do not know or admit they have it. It cannot be really medicated or regulated that well. It's pretty insane. And I believe that Kanye West has this. The way he acts on stage, the way he tweets, it's quite obvious. Our president-elect has the same thing. And I will leave you with this. These, according to the Mayo Clinic, are the signs of narcissistic personality disorder. Again, which is a real disorder, has nothing to do with you take a selfie and you like how you look. Narcissistic personality disorder is a mental disorder in which people have an inflated sense of their own importance, a deep need for admiration, and a lack of empathy for others. But behind this mask of ultra confidence lies a fragile self-esteem that's vulnerable to the slightest criticism. Hitler had this. A narcissistic personality disorder causes problems in many areas of life, such as relationships, work, school, or financial affairs. You may be generally unhappy and disappointed when you're not given the special favors, not paying taxes, or admiration, not winning the popular vote, you believe you deserve. Others may not enjoy being around you, half the country, and you may find your relationships unfulfilling. Narcissistic personality disorder treatment is centered around talk therapy. It's one of the several types of personality disorders. They are conditions which people have traits that cause them to feel and behave in socially distressing ways, limiting their ability to function. If you have narcissistic personality disorder, you may come across as conceited, boastful, or pretentious. You often monopolize conversations. You may belittle or look down on people you perceive as inferior. You feel a sense of entitlement. And when you don't receive special treatment, you become impatient or angry. You may insist on having the best of everything. For example, the best car, the best athletic club, or the best medical care. At the same time, you have trouble handling anything that may be perceived as criticism, like people on SNL making jokes about you. You may have secret feelings of insecurity, shame, vulnerability, and humiliation. To feel better, you may react with rage or contempt and try to belittle the other person to make yourself appear superior. Or you may feel depressed and moody because you fall short of perfection. Having an exaggerated sense of self-importance, expecting to be recognized as superior even without achievements that warrant it, exaggerating your achievements and talents, being preoccupied with fantasies about success, power, brilliance, beauty, or the perfect mate, believing that you are superior and can only be understood by or associate with equally special people, requiring constant attention, having a sense of entitlement, expecting special favors, and unquestioning compliance with your expectations, taking advantage of others to get what you want, having an inability or unwillingness to recognize the needs and feelings of others, being envious of others and believing others envy you, behaving in an arrogant or haughty manner. Although some features of narcissistic personality disorder may seem like having confidence, it's not the same. Narcissistic personality disorder crosses the border of healthy confidence into thinking so highly of yourself that you put yourself on a pedestal and value yourself more than you value others. When you have this, you may not want to think that anything could be wrong. Doing so wouldn't fit with your image of self-power and perfection. They're most likely to seek treatment when they start to develop depression, often because of perceived criticisms or rejection. Risk factors. Oh, this is about in childhood. Well, that's it. I don't know. Is he ever going to get therapy? Probably not. But that, my friends, is narcissistic personality disorder. Well, I have gone 15 minutes over my promised time. I didn't get to talk about shrooms or vegans that are mad at money, or Mike Pence goes home and his neighbors put up gay flags all over their houses just to piss him off. But maybe we'll talk about vegans being mad at money and shrooms might be able to save our fear of death as we head to the final stages in our hospice beds, if we get so lucky to get one. We'll talk about that next time. And until the regular episode of I Seem Fun, have fun.